From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
President Trump and Democratic leaders in Congress deliver dueling appeals to the nation on funding security at the border. Did either one persuade anyone who wasn't already persuaded? And what happens now? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot from the Wall Street Journal and here to talk about this and the resignation, looming resignation of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, Kim Strassel. Hey, Kim.
Hi, Paul.
So my verdict, Kim, on the speeches was the only good news for Donald Trump was that the Democrats were almost as bad. I thought that his remarks were too narrowly cast for a speech of that character. They were aimed, it seemed to me, more at the people who already agree with him fundamentally. There were few. I mean, I thought that he was most persuasive in reaching out to a larger audience. We talked about the humanitarian problems at the border, driven by the arrival of children and families, which and those are real. The Customs and Border Protection Service is really overwhelmed at some of these ports of entry, and the asylum system is broken. But the parade of horribles of criminals and so on that he went through, I think, it was overkill. And I wish that he had reached out to say, you know what, if the Democrats do this and give me the security funding I think we need as a country, then I'm willing to consider some of their ideas on immigration, including DACA and some of the temporary visa holders from Haiti and other countries who will soon be deported under some of President Trump's decisions. I didn't hear that. And, of course, Democrats gave him right back in kind. But we'll talk about the Democrats in a second. What do you think?
Yeah, he started off well enough. His tone was not that bad, at least in the beginning. And he, you know, he made a couple of statements that I thought were welcome. You know, he did talk about the fact that we do, with open arms, embrace lots of legal immigrants every year. It was always good to hear the president talk about the benefits of legal immigration and the value immigrants bring to our country. He did talk a lot about other things that need to be done at the border, as you mentioned, about new technology for detecting drugs and weapons, many of which, by the way, come through legal points of entry to the United States. He talked about needing more agents, more judges to handle immigration cases, more bed spaces, more medical support. And he also talked about how he had called on Congress to fix some loopholes in the law to allow the administration to more humanely return children back over the border, because there are some real problems with that. He even, and I was, you know, I thought that this was probably the most you were going to get in terms of an overture from Trump, but he said, you know, and then I want my wall, but we don't have to call it a wall. We can call it a physical barrier because that's what Democrats want, and it can be steel. It doesn't have to be concrete. I mean, these are supposedly, in Donald Trump's minds, his concessions to Democrats.
They don't strike me as all that big a concession. I mean, they're mostly semantic.
No, they are. But then, as you said, he turned to a long sort of tirade about crimes and gang warfare. And it was very dark the way he can be when he talks about this subject. And then there was just too much of the wall as well. Defensive on the wall, why walls are necessary, why people build their own walls. It was a lot of stuff about the wall. And as you said, nothing at the end that would actually entice Democrats to come over to his side, because this is Donald Trump's problem, in that they don't feel they need to give him anything. And he's not offering them anything other than semantics in return. And that was the fundamental mismatch of last night.
Yeah. And I think you heard that from the Democrats. They look like they think they're pushing for total victory, total capitulation. They're not offering anything, essentially. And they basically said they didn't offer him any kind of rhetorical concession at all. The only thing they said was, well, everybody's for border security. But the president is essentially manufacturing a crisis. He is acting out of malice and cruelty. And even soft-sold, they tried to dismiss, rather, the fact that there is this real humanitarian problem from all these families and children who are coming in the border, and they're asking for asylum. And under American policy, if they ask for asylum, then they can't be deported while their cases are being heard. So while those cases are being heard, a couple of things have to happen. Either the Customs and Border Protection, ICE, have to find places for them, which means beds, which means housing, which means in many cases medical care, child care, or they have to be released into the country to stay with relatives if they're unaccompanied minors, or go out and find some jobs. And because some of these claims, asylum claims, can take, because of the backlog with in U.S. immigration courts, asylum courts can take 3 to 5 years to be heard. So that's become an enticement for people to come and arrive with families and children and say, hey, I'll take my chances. If I don't like life in El Salvador, I'll come to the United States, apply for asylum if I can get into the United States, apply, and then they'll have to release me, and we're there. We're working, and then we'll, you know, take it from there. Even if we may not show up for a hearing when it happens down the road. So Democrats weren't even willing to give him any ground on that subject.
No, and that's a smart approach for the administration. And you saw it again at the beginning of Donald Trump's speech. It was a pity that he didn't stay on that theme, because it's the weak point, I think, for Democrats, is to really frame this as a humanitarian crisis. You know, we can argue, and the press clearly wants to argue with Donald Trump about every statistic about crime. I have to just have a shout out, by the way, for the so-called fact checkers in the media last night who were so ready for bear on this that they were, you know, even disputing crime statistics that simply are the case. But you can argue about whether or not the reality of border security, if that amounts to a crisis, if it's more or less than it has been in the past in terms of the number of people bringing drugs over or the number of crimes committed by illegal aliens. What you cannot argue with, as you said, is that we have a new type of problem down there, which is driven by these families, caravans coming up, and overwhelming of the system, which is leading to a humanitarian issue. And this is the ground at which Democrats have less of a leg to stand on, and where Donald Trump and the administration would definitely have the high ground. You see them turning a little bit more to that issue, but it really ought to be their number one focus.
All right. We're talking about the debate over immigration and the border funding, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
Join The Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel. And let's talk about where this debate goes from here, Kim, after these dueling speeches on Tuesday night to a national audience. I don't think many people on either side of the issue across the country were moved by the different stands by the two parties, and that probably hurts the president more, since I think he has to persuade Congress to move Congress to provide the funding. Democrats, to my mind, didn't look like they're going to give him a dollar, maybe a dime additional here. They think they're going for the kill, metaphorically speaking, politically on this. The president, meanwhile, is trying to shore up Republican support, beginning to weaken a bit, don't you think? And on Capitol Hill, some people peeling off, Lisa Murkowski saying, well, let's fund the rest of the government that's not funded right now as a, and leave the border funding question till later. That's, the, of course, the Democratic issue line. And there are more Republicans saying that. President's going up to Capitol Hill to try to Senate caucus to persuade them. But over time, I think the Republicans are going to, their support is going to weaken.
Especially because it's going to get harder to hold out. I've been doing some really fun reporting over the last couple of days just about the somewhat innovative ways that the administration has gone about making this shutdown not as painful as it might be. And they were helped by the fact we're kind of in an uncharted ground here in that it's a partial shutdown. Most of the government is funded. And so that's made it a little bit easier. But that's some of the measures that they have taken, which have largely, again, interesting, uncharted, but legal, are nonetheless going to be one-time things. And we're about to start seeing some things that they can't get around. You know, we're about to have a bad day coming up here where federal employees are not going to get a paycheck.
Right.
And that's all going to increase pressure on members of Congress as the media keeps pumping out stories about all of the pain and agony. It's for them to bend. And so I think you'll see more of them start peeling off. And that probably brings us to a greater focus in the White House on a declaration of a national emergency and whether that is Trump's only out here.
Right. And on that front, you get we've been doing a little reporting on that. This would essentially mean that the president would say, well, if he doesn't get his money from Congress, he could say, well, I have authority that has been delegated to me by Congress under through the National Emergencies Act and a couple of other statutes to take money that has been appropriated for other causes. And such as military construction, where there's some unauthorized money that is in the pot that Congress has appropriated since last September. Trump signed that bill, but has not been explicitly allocated, and take that money and apply it as a matter of emergency to border construction through military, and say it's essentially an emergency, and have the military do it. Now, you're beginning to see some doubts raised by some Republicans on the Hill about that. Mac Thornberry, who's the head of Armed Services the ranking member on Armed Services in the House, he doesn't much like that idea, but. It may be, as you suggest, Kim, the only out the president has if he really wants to get the money to do this. Because if the Democrats won't appropriate it, he can't get it any other way. And he would then be able to say to his supporters, well, okay, I'm acting, number one. Number two, we're going to get some of the wall built. We're going to do it this way. And then when he's inevitably sued to block this, we'll see what happens in court. And even if there's an injunction against it, he could say, well, at least I tried.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be the most likely outcome of this in the end. I don't see anybody budging. I don't see any room for a compromise, unfortunately, because the deal is there. It's pretty easy what needs to happen here. You have some sort of immigration deal on DACA, for instance, in return for border funding, security funding of a broader package. But that's just not going to happen. And so I see the president going down this road. I kind of wish he wouldn't. I understand the argument for it politically, but legally, this is a very tough question. There's always a fine line between creativity and lawlessness. Or just bad precedent. You don't necessarily want the president expanding, especially this president. We spent a lot of time criticizing the prior administration for just ignoring the law when it was not to their benefit. And one thing I've actually liked about the Trump administration is they've had very careful general counsels in all the different departments, and they really have tried to return to a general rule of law. It might be not be the president's inclination to do that all the time. He just kind of wants to do what he wants to do. But the people around him have been quite good on that. So I'd rather not see them go down that road. But it may be, as you say, the only kind of political out he sees, and therefore I have no doubt that he'll pull that pin if he can.
Well, one of the great ironies here, of course, is that if he goes ahead with this, there always is the question in a lawsuit, who is standing? That is, who can claim injury from any decision? That's a necessity if you're seeking your day in court. Now, the landowners, I think, at the border would have standing. Okay, they could sue. But Congress of the United States might also have standing. And the great irony is, you know why, Kim? Because of John Boehner's lawsuit against President Obama for not spending money, for spending money that hadn't been appropriated on Obamacare. Remember, Boehner and the Republican Congress won that case in district court in the District of Columbia Federal Circuit. Now, it didn't go above that. It didn't go further up to the Supreme Court, and because the administration left town. But nonetheless, was a significant judicial victory that would give Democrats the ability to sue President Obama for spending money that they claimed was not properly appropriated by Congress. So that's one way it could be adjudicated. I suspect Democrats would sue Trump, and then we'd see what happened in the D.C. Circuit as it goes up to up to the Supreme Court. I do think that Trump is on somewhat firmer ground here with the emergency spending than he was under than President Obama was under Obamacare. Because there is money that's been appropriated for military construction, and if Trump uses the military in a certain way, if he uses the military at the border, he can probably justify it that way.
Oh, I think he could. I think he could. I just think that, you know, there's a lot of very complex legal questions surrounding it, and potential precedents being set, which, you know, it's always scary when you go down that road or just uncharted territory. Although this administration, you know, they do tend to push the bubble a little bit on some of that stuff. And sometimes there has been benefits of that as well. Two, you know, a further irony, though, Paul, when you were talking about that Boehner lawsuit, is I remember watching the Democrats also vehemently rejected that lawsuit and made the argument that Congress didn't have standing, which I found was amusing at the time because normally there's an institutional desire to at least protect and promote the powers of the branch of government that you were in. But the Democrats were very, very critical of that lawsuit. So it'll be interesting to see if they go the same route.
Oh, and I think they'll forget about all that stuff.
I think
then.
They will.
Well, and I agree with you politically. I don't really like the idea of President Trump's establishing a extend this precedent of being able to use the military for construction at the border. I don't like it, and I hope he doesn't do it. But I think he may feel that it's the only way out of this box canyon, political box canyon, in which he has put himself on funding and the shutdown. All right, let's turn briefly to another legal issue. Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General. The news leaking that he will depart the Justice Department as Deputy AG in the coming weeks after a new Attorney General is confirmed, assuming that Bill Barr, President Trump's nominee for AG, is confirmed. How would that change matters at the Justice Department, Kim?
Well, you know what? I think this is going to be a turn for the good. And that is not necessarily because I think Rod Rosenstein is a bad deputy attorney general or a bad person. But I'll tell you what he is. He's an institutionalist. He spent much of his career. He was a prosecutor, I believe, a U.S. prosecutor in Maryland, but much of his time at the Justice Department. And he went into that job, I think, with the attitude that he was going to protect the department and its reputation at all costs. And that was not what the Department of Justice needed coming off of what happened in 2016 and the FBI's very poor handling of both of its Clinton investigation and then its Donald Trump investigation. You needed someone that was going to go in there with a determination that they were going to take a very hard look at what had happened and decide whether or not there needed to be some changes or reforms or hold someone accountable. He was never going to be the guy to do that. And you've seen that. He has been been obstinate in the face of Republican congressional oversight, requests for documents. He just has not been a cooperator in that regard. And hopefully a new attorney general who comes in from the outside is – and we have William Barr, who's been nominated. He'll be starting his confirmation hearings on January 15th. Hopefully that's an opportunity for a whole new fresh look.
Well, and of course, the fear, the concern raised by critics is that Rosenstein, who's been supervising the Robert Mueller investigation, the special counsel probe, if he leaves, then that will be in jeopardy, and the president or the next AG could fire Mueller. I think that's not going to happen with Bill Barr. He's not going to do that. There will, of course, be a question when Robert Mueller presents his report. If he doesn't present it to Rosenstein, he would be presenting it to the next attorney general, who will not have recused himself from the probe, from supervising the probe the way Jeff Sessions did, the former AG. But in that case, I don't think there's any question. I mean, once Mueller writes a report, it will get and find its way into public, whether or not Bill Barr would like it to be released or not. It will be leaked, subpoenaed by Capitol Hill, something like that.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be able to do much. I agree with – I mean, to stop that from happening. And I agree with you. I don't think Bill Barr is going to anyway stop Mueller, fire him, or impede what he's doing. I think there might be a little bit – there could potentially be some more oversight, although we'll see if that's – even that's a little bit dangerous, and the attorney general might feel that politically could backfire on him because, of course, if he were to offer any instruction to Mueller or guiding principles, it would surely be leaked out and he would be accused of interference. But I think that the more – hopeful aspect of this in terms of a fresh start is that perhaps, you know, Bill Barr is going to be able to go back and look again at what happened within the agency, within the Department of Justice, the use of FISA applications, the conduct of the FBI, or maybe have a word with this guy, John Huber, who is this prosecutor out in Utah, who was supposed to be looking at all this. But according at least to my congressional sources, as they've interviewed witnesses, they have yet to come across a single one that has been interviewed by Mr. Huber. So it makes them wonder what exactly he has been doing. No one seems to have any idea. But just hopefully restart the process of taking a good hard look at the Department of Justice and the FBI and their actions.
Okay, Kim, thank you. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.